virtuoso of the short story form, and one of the best writers in America, according to O Magazine. She is renowned in literary circles for perfecting the craft of the extremely short, short story, and is beginning to enjoy a much wider readership. Novelist David Eggers has said that Davis's work blows the roof off of so many of our assumptions about what constitutes short fiction. Her most recent book is The Collected Stories. It is a compilation of pieces from four previously published volumes. The Arts Walk, a literary arts festival that takes place in Hudson at the Hudson Opera House this weekend, will feature Lydia Davis. She'll be reading with writer James Lasden, and it gives us a wonderful excuse to invite her to our studio. And it's a great pleasure and a great honor, a thrill, to welcome Lydia Davis to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, I'm very pleased to be here again.
Always delighted to have you here, and I love that you are with us and doing this event in Hudson. Okay, let's first talk about the Man Booker Prize, because that is just awesome. How is that always unexpected? I assume that. I mean, you never think that's coming down the pike.
Well, I suppose some things you daydream about, but I wasn't even aware of this. I have to confess, it's a fairly new prize. I think it started in 2004, and I was very surprised and very pleased when I found out I was one of the finalists. And I honestly didn't expect, I didn't even daydream about winning the actual prize, and it's often enough to be a finalist for some of these prizes. You're very proud to put that on your resume. So that was enough. And I didn't, right up to the very minute that the judge announced it, I did not expect to win it.
I think the thing that is so impressive about the award itself and about your work is that this is for your body of work. This isn't for one particular particular book, one particular translation. This is for your body of work as both a short story writer and as a translator, which I think is a beautiful way of recognizing your talents and the multifaceted nature of those talents.
Yeah, that was really another reason I didn't expect to win it, because often you can be nominated because, you know, some of the judges may admire the sorts of things you're doing. But in my case, it takes a particular reader to really, really love the work. And so I thought, nominated, okay. But the winner will be someone who isn't doing something quite so quirky or innovative.
How do you, quirky is an interesting word. I love that word to describe your work. And I use the quote from Dave Eggers because I want to explore it with you. Blows the roof off of so many of our assumptions about what constitutes short fiction. What do you think our assumptions are going in?
Well, I suppose we have a model in our head. You know, we've had years of pretty good English classes with any luck, you know, in high school and college. And so we've read all the greatest traditional short stories. And so I think of Chekhov, and I think of Catherine Mansfield, Hemingway, Fitzgerald, and so on. So we have a model in our head, you know, and we're even taught in creative writing classes, you know, grab the reader's attention, set up the scene, description, narration, dialogue, you know, it's follows a certain formula, although when you look at each really wonderful short story writer, each is very different. Flannery O'Connor gives you her voice right away. It's very different. But I suppose he means, well, I decided at a certain point I didn't have to do that, and I didn't have to follow that model, although I could, and I do return to it now and then. But I could do really anything I want, long, short, and verging on poetry, verging on meditation.
Is that freeing?
Is that what?
Freeing, in the sense of making that conscious discovery that you can do that.
Yes, it took a little while. First, I felt freed up to do the very short form. period. And then I sort of had a further freeing up that, yes, I could not only do that, but anything. And it makes it all very enjoyable, yeah.
And that comes with years of hard work and experience and a confidence that you have to have in yourself, right?
Yeah.
You're not born without out of the box.
No. And I have to say that even though I have that confidence, it doesn't mean that a new piece is just, I'm sure that this is fine and it's good and that's, you know, you have the same doubt often about each new piece that you had years ago. You know you can probably pull it off, but especially when you try something new and different, it has its own rules and you sort of have to learn from it as much as you dictate those rules.
This always fascinates me because at what point then do you become reassured that what you are working on is going in the right direction? Because it ultimately depends on you.
If it pleases me, that's all I expect. And there have even been cases where I put a story in a book thinking, well, this is going to get criticized. I did a very long story, over 40 pages, even though we're talking about the short form, but over 40 pages, really just analyzing the lives of two old women. And a good editor friend of mine said, you know, you should cut it by 3/4. Mm. But I thought a lot about that, but decided I love every bit of it. And so I'm willing to be criticized for going on too long, having, you know, a shapeless story, whatever's going to be said, it's all right, because I really like it.
And when you come to the finality of even the shortest of pieces, of knowing when it's over, I've had so many conversations with short story writers or writers of short stories who say that they are often given that moment of, do I want to use this as a short story or do I want to work on this to become a novel? You don't have that necessarily. You're always thinking about the short story.
Yes, I'm not worried about writing a novel, but I have written one novel, and the way that came about was simply that I had accumulated so many pieces of writing, passages of writing to go into a story, that at a certain point I realized this can't just be a story. It's going to have to be a long story, which is a novel. But generally I have a very clear idea right away how long something will be, whether it'll be a sentence or two or whether it'll be a paragraph or a page. Sometimes they grow and grow.
Do you mind reading a little bit for us this morning?
I'd be happy to. There are many to choose from, of course, but I thought short would be good. And I thought also I would read an early story because it actually dates from a time when I was setting myself the challenge to write two very small stories each day. And that forced me to write things I didn't really premeditate. So this one is a little rough, brutal, and it's called The Mother. The girl wrote a story. But how much better it would be if you wrote a novel, said her mother. The girl built a dollhouse. But how much better if it were a real house, her mother said. The girl made a small pillow for her father. But wouldn't a quilt be more practical, said her mother. The girl dug a small hole in the garden. But how much better if you dug a large hole, said her mother. The girl dug a large hole and went to sleep in it. But how much better if you slept forever, said her mother.
That's beautiful. And I guess one of the questions and of the things when we think of stories and I think of the dissection of the term novella and, you know, how we determine on what is considered a novel, what is considered a novella, what's considered a short story. And this is a very short piece of work, but very much has a beginning, middle, and an end, right?
Right. I mean, it sort of has a pattern, of course, but it starts out mild and ends up a little hard-hitting, and the end took me completely by surprise. It sort of followed logically from the, you know, make it longer, make it bigger. If you're going to sleep forever. But I didn't plan that from the beginning. I didn't plan any of it, really. It just unfolded.
How long do you work on the language and the crafting of the language?
The first draft is done very quickly, so that I will, I guess, first of all, get it all, everything that's just coming, and secondly, not stop it by thinking too much about it. So the first draft is very fast. But then I go through a piece again and again and again and again and again, making sure every word is right and every punctuation mark.
Is that, obviously that's the hard work, but is there also fun in that? Because I've heard it described as that's where you get to play with the language.
Yeah, I'd say it's hard work without the anxiety. And the first draft and the beginning of the piece, I think for most people, is full of anxiety. You know, is this going to come out?
Right.
Is it going to happen? So it's not as much fun in one sense. And then, yes, tinkering with it, even though it's hard work and patient work, it requires a lot of patience and time, is the happier work, I think.
Actors so often tell me that they can't watch their own work or that they are uncomfortable seeing themselves on the screen. Even radio announcers have trouble hearing their voices. In just you reading that, are you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable reading it. I'm comfortable reading on stage, but I'm the same. I don't like to watch videos of myself or YouTube horrors, you know. I'd rather live with the illusions, I think.
But you don't think when you're reading of, oh, wow, I went through this 8 times and that punctuation could have been different or that word could have been different?
I do a little of that. There are some stories that no matter how hard I worked on them, I could not get the ending quite the way I wanted it to be. And so I'll notice that each time, yeah. But I am very careful, and I take a lot of time. So if something isn't working, I don't rush to finish it and send it off. I just put it aside for as long as it takes and come back to it.
And when you say come back to it and as long as it takes, is that does the spirit move you in the sense, or is there a pile and you will go through it deliberately?
The spirit moves me, I'd say, more. And nowadays, of course, it's not a paper pile.
Right.
Maybe I shouldn't say of course, but it's on the computer screen, and I have my desktop on the computer screen is scattered with little files in progress. They're all out there, not neatly put in a folder. So if I'm working on one piece and I've done as much as I can, then I'll sort of spot another one and almost impulsively, sometimes even when I'm not really supposed to be working on this at all, but say getting ready to go somewhere, I'll just impulsively click on that story and see, well, how does it look today? You know, I haven't looked at it for 3 weeks. Does anything jump out at me that, you know, is it okay? Does it need more, you know?
The latest, the book that you just read from is The Collected Stories, and this is it's a beautiful collection. It's safe to say, I'm curious as to your input, ultimately. Were these your decisions as to what would be included?
Well, it was actually very simple, and that was that we included all the stories from the 4 existing books.
So there was no editing process?
There was no editing. I think they did ask me, you know, do you want to pick and choose? But I really didn't, you know, I feel strongly about the integrity of a book, so I felt let's leave it whole. You know, there may be weaker stories or stronger, but let's leave it the way it is.
So you see in this a progression of a writer?
Well, even that is a little confusing, because what I've done with each collection of stories that's come out is take some very early stories that perhaps appeared just in a small print edition, I look at them again, a story maybe from 30 years ago, and say, well, this deserves, you know, another chance to stay more permanently in the world. So some of the latest, some of the earliest stories appear in the latest collections.
Lydia Davis is our guest. The book is The Collected Stories of Lydia Davis. She will be part of Arts Walk Literary Arts Festival in Hudson. We'll talk more about that and continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We are thrilled to have Lydia Davis with us. She is an author, a short story writer, and the recipient of the Man Booker International Prize. And she will be a part of Arts Walk Literary Arts Festival that takes place at the Hudson Opera House in Hudson this weekend. She'll be reading with writer James Lasden from 3:30 to 5 tomorrow. And as you said earlier, you enjoy these events where you go out and talk and read. And
I do. I enjoy reading aloud, even if it's a children's story to my kids in the past. I love reading aloud, and I like usually read new, brand new things so that I can sort of hear them out loud and test the reactions.
Is that reaction important to you? Does it alter anything, I guess, ultimately?
I love it. I don't know if it alters. I wouldn't go home and sort of revise a story because not enough people laughed or something. Mm. So it is what it is, you know. But I love sharing them, and I love sort of like-minded people enjoying them the way I enjoy them.
Does laughter give you confidence?
Oh yes, it's much easier to read the funny things. There are stories that have barely a hint of humor in them that are sad or difficult, but I'm very sparing in reading those. They're harder to read.
I find myself, and this is why I love your work so, is that I normally in a short story collection, if it is maybe 8-10 stories, I will read it from cover to cover. But when you have a collection like this, I'll find myself, you dip in, you dip out, you go here, you go there. And with your work, I just devoured it because I started that way and I couldn't do that. And the eclectic quality, and I guess this goes back to what you were saying earlier about it being new pieces and old pieces and things that have been in collections, and there is a variance to it. Do you get feedback as to how people come to your work and how they'll read a short story?
Yes, I do. I mean, I get a sort of scattered sense of it. You know, I hear a little bit from one person and a little bit from another. And I guess very few read it straight ahead. They may open it at random and they'll spot a little story that's only two lines long, and they'll say, "Well, I can read this, in the 2 minutes I have before I have to walk out the door." And I kind of, that's fine with me because, of course, they weren't written in any kind of sequence. I'm always very careful about the order that I put them in just sort of with the idea that it could be read from beginning to end and there should be a nice progression from one to the next. But then I really don't mind how people read them.
Well, we would love for you to read another story for us from the collected stories of Lydia Davis.
Good. I will read From Below as a Neighbor. If I were not me and overheard me from below as a neighbor talking to him, I would say to myself how glad I was not to be her, not to be sounding the way she is sounding, with a voice like her voice and an opinion like her opinion. But I cannot hear myself from below as a neighbor. I cannot hear how I ought not to sound. I cannot be glad I am not her as I would be if I could hear her. Then again, since I am her, I am not sorry to be here up above where I cannot hear her as a neighbor, where I cannot say to myself, as I would have to from below, how glad I am not to be her.
From below as a neighbor. There's a point in that story toward the end where you say then again, and it's questioning everything from before.
It is. It's sort of that the story is written as my own reasoning progresses. So again, the story was not planned from the beginning. Only the beginning was known when I started writing the story. And once I got to a certain logical place in it, I saw, well, there's another thing to consider here.
And the last words of "How glad I am not to be her" are so powerful.
Yes. Well, I'm sure it, you know, again, I don't think too hard before I write something, but after I've written it, I can see it reflects our, most of us have that feeling of being many people in one, you know.
Right.
Oh, I liked the way I was today, but oh, I didn't like the way I was today. And it's as if we do combine many different people, and we see ourselves from the outside and regret things.
And working on that particular, on just those words, and you use the word tinkering, which I love, is that an example of where you would have tinkered quite a bit?
I'm sure I would work a lot with that particular story because of the repetition and the rhythm in it, and particularly the repetition. If you're using heavy repetition, you want to do it right. Not too much, not too little.
Hmm. When you look at the overall perception, and as a professor and as someone who goes to universities and talks to students about writing, the overall perception of short stories, and this goes back to our earlier conversation about what Dave Eggers said about the assumptions, but also about the commercial nature of what it is that you do, and how we as consumers react to it. The rule of thumb is that short stories don't sell as well as a novel or fiction, which I've never quite understood, A, if that's true, and B, why, if it is.
I think it's probably true. I mean, I certainly kept hearing it from my own publisher, and I had a funny situation in the mid-90s where I had my next book of stories, which was Almost No Memory, was ready to go. It was all done. And I had, at the same time, several chapters of the novel called The End of the Story. And I assumed that they would want the book that was finished. And then in the meantime, I would finish the novel, and that would be the next one. But they said no, they wanted me to finish the novel and publish that next, because a novel would find more readers and bring more attention to me before we went on to the next collection of stories. So it didn't seem logical to me, but I went along with it. So there's a long gap between Break It Down, which was in 86, and I think the novel was in 95. There's a longer gap than there had to be. And I can sort of understand people wanting to read a novel over a short story, even though I'm writing stories. Because in a novel, you can immerse yourself in another world, in other lives, for a nice long time. And you can continue, you know, if you read at night before going to sleep, you pick it up again every night and you're back in that world. Mm. So I can sympathize with that. It would never persuade me, because I was sort of a child of the 60s, idealistic 60s. It would never persuade me to say, okay, I need to get more success, more commercial success. I'm going to write a novel now. Put aside these stories. I just wouldn't do that. I write what I want to write.
Mm. And the idea of when you talk to your students about this, does the commercial come up, that aspect of, okay, there is the art, but then there is the actual, how do you make a living doing this?
Yeah, it does certainly come up. Students are interested in finding an agent and finding a publisher, and I sort of try to indulge that a little. I'm not crazy about thinking about that when you still don't have your verb tenses the way they should be. But I indulge it a little bit. It's sort of daydream country. And I even try to allow for different aims in writing. You know, there is the sort of commercial success aim, you know, the Dan Brown book, you know. I want to make it big. I want to sell millions of copies no matter what, you know, how. I don't want to make great art.
Right. So quality be damned.
Yeah, yeah. So I try to, you know, direct the conversation back to just working on the prose, but I'm sympathetic.
I just thought of something when I remember when Maya Angelou was doing the inaugural poem for Bill Clinton, and she was on the show, and we were talking about that process, and she said she just all she needed, she went into a hotel room, and she had a dictionary, a Bible, and a bottle of scotch, and that was pretty much all she needed.
And
I mean, is it very sparse of what you need besides this incredible knowledge, and I assume literary inspiration that also comes with that?
Well, I think I have a lot of tags of lines in my head from very, very wonderful writers, and I mean things like, you know, the beginning of a Shakespeare sonnet and that sort of thing. And I think that kind of having a head full of those rhythms and those sounds is very important to writing well. I'm a big fan of memorization, and I actually made my class for the first time memorize poems last year, one each. And I don't know if they hated me for it, but it was a wonderful thing for me to hear. And I don't need much to write either. I don't need the bottle of scotch. That wouldn't be good for me. It would not have a good outcome. But often I'll write something, say, on a train. I take trains a lot. I love just sitting on a train looking out the window. So when there's something going on, like the scenery going by, you know, just something slightly monotonous going on, is rather a nice way to write.
The thought of Vonnegut, before he passed, wrote an essay and short story collection, and I talked to him about that. And Kurt Vonnegut said that he loved it because it brought out, he felt he was a scruffy writer, and that it brought out his scruffy nature, and that in the novels he felt sometimes they had to be polished, and he liked the idea of it not being of it being scruffy because it was more him. Do you feel that your voice comes through very much in the stories?
It probably does, although strangely,
I wouldn't call it scruffy, certainly.
I
wasn't making that determination. I was just saying about the, you know, the voice coming through.
Right. No, I think it does come through, but it's a little bit of a paradox, because often I am adopting the voice, or I feel I'm adopting the voice of a slightly different kind of person. Maybe someone with an exaggeration of some of my qualities, but I feel each story from one to the next, that story from below as a neighbor, it's not precisely me, the one that's speaking. It's someone a little bit different from me. So each story feels a little different in that way. And that the very long one I mentioned before about the two old women is told in the voice of a sociologist, some kind of scientist who's being very, very neutral and cool. And that's not me either. So even though each story may have a bit of my voice in it, I feel each one is a little different.
Lydia Davis will be part of the Arts Walk Literary Arts Festival that takes place at the Hudson Opera House in Hudson this weekend. She'll be reading with writer James Lasden from 3:30 to 5 tomorrow. I'm hoping you can leave us with one final story.
I'd be happy to. It's one of the harder ones to read, so I'm being mean to myself, but here it is. It's called A Mown Lawn. She hated a mown lawn. Maybe that was because Mo was the reverse of Wom, the beginning of the name of what she was, a woman. A mown lawn had a sad sound to it, like a long moan. From her, a mown lawn made a long moan. Lawn had some of the letters of man, though the reverse of man would be Nam, a bad war, a raw war. Lawn also contained the letters of law. In fact, lawn was a contraction of lawman. Certainly a lawman could and did mow a lawn. Law and order could be seen as starting from lawn order, valued by so many Americans. More lawn could be made using a lawn mower. A lawn mower did make more lawn. More lawn was a contraction of more lawmen. Did more lawn in America make more lawmen in America? Did more lawn make more Nam? More mown lawn made more long moan from her, or a lawn mourn. So often she said Americans wanted more mown lawn. All of America might be one long mown lawn. A lawn not mown grows long, she said. Better a long lawn. Better a long lawn and a mole. Let the lawman have the mown lawn, she said. Or the moron, the lawn moron.
Mm. Well, first of all, beautifully read. Second of all, my God, there's so much going on there.
Yes.
which is wonderful to explore. Lydia Davis is amazing, and she will be reading with writer James Lasden tomorrow, 3:30 to 5:30, as part of the Arts Walk Hudson Literary, the Arts Walk Literary Arts Festival in Hudson. It's at the Hudson Opera House from 3:30 to 5 tomorrow. The book is The Collected Stories of Lydia Davis. It's published by Picador. Lydia Davis, a thrill and a delight to have you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank
I'm
you
a
so
big
much.
Fan.
Thank you. Right back to you.
Bye.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.